Did you know that you can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by donating stocks, bonds, and mutual funds to Lutheran Public Radio? For more information, contact Craig at 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Please consider donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds to Issues Etc. this year. Call Craig today, 618-223-8382. Thanks for your support.
Religious liberty will be protected, and a law that requires free preventive care will not discriminate against women.
Today, the Ninth Circuit of Appeals said to our family and millions of Americans that we are equal under the law.
The dissenting opinion by Judge Smith said very clearly that there is a very rational and legitimate government reason for the protection of marriage between only a man and a woman.
For he took the uncleanness and captivity of all nations upon himself on the cross. He really and truly traded places with us all, that we be set free, the unclean made clean again.
Duluth, Minnesota letter carriers love Issues Etc.
We've been following the story about Susan G. Komen for the Cure and Planned Parenthood here on Issues Etc. And last week, as we were talking about it, as the news was still unfolding, one of our guests said that this was a decisive victory for Planned Parenthood. It's sad to say that, but I think it's true. It was a media victory. It was a political victory. It was a fundraising victory. So how did they pull that off? How did they manage to get Komen to change its mind that quickly and that decisively? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Tuesday afternoon, the 14th of February, Valentine's Day. Professor Carter Sneed of Notre Dame University will be with us for the first half hour. We'll answer that question I just posed. Then Dr. Jennifer Oback-Morse joins us from the Ruth Institute. We'll talk about last week was Sex Week at Yale University. Then Dr. James Buscher joins us on this Valentine's Day to remember the real late 3rd century martyr, Saint Valentine. Professor Carter Sneed is a regular guest. He's professor of law and director of the Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame. He's co-author of a recent column in the Wall Street Journal titled Planned Parenthood's Hostages. Professor Sneed, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back.
We had a guest on recently when we were covering the Planned Parenthood Susan G. Komen for the Cure debacle, who finally concluded, look, this was, like it or not, a decisive victory for Planned Parenthood. They came out smelling like a rose with all their money intact. Their big donors, like Komen, will never pull something like this again. How did Planned Parenthood pull this off?
Well, I think it's important to understand that Planned Parenthood is a billion-dollar corporation which has extraordinary cultural, political, and media resources. It is. It funds. Its political action committee funds an enormous array of abortion rights supporting politicians. It's regarded as a very important a humanitarian organization in certain elite circles of our culture, and the people that support Planned Parenthood tend to have a lot of money, it is a behemoth. I mean, there are not many institutions, not many organizations, not many corporations, I would say, that have the kind of power that Planned Parenthood does. I mean, you just see what just happened, and it's sort of breathtaking. Susan G. Komen was overnight went from one of the most beloved charities in America. You can't turn on a sporting event and not see pink ribbons. The entire White House was pink to celebrate their push for finding treatments and a cure for breast cancer. And overnight, they went from being a much beloved organization by many, many people to being an object of scorn and hate. There were calls to defund the Komen Foundation. It's an extraordinary thing. And you had members of Congress taking to the floor of Congress who were condemning Susan G. Komen for refusing to fund, I guess it was like 19 locations out of 800 locations of Planned Parenthood, 19 clinics that they gave grants to for manual screenings and not even actual mammograms. So $650,000 out of Planned Parenthood's $1 billion revenue stream each year forced them to try to destroy, and very nearly did destroy, an organization that that was beloved by many, many people. So I'd be hard-pressed to come up with an example of a similar kind of a scenario in which one corporation was able to utterly bring to its knees another organization that had a great deal of cultural power.
So Komen was made an example of by Planned Parenthood, but of course it's not a limited case. There are many other examples. You have written recently in the Wall Street Journal about a vast array of other organizations, persons, as you say, held hostage, held for ransom by Planned Parenthood. Talk about that.
Yeah, it's an extreme. I mean, the past 2 years has seen an amazing series of events in which Planned Parenthood and its allies in politics were able to impose its will on and bring to the brink of disaster several different different institutions, different moments, including the U.S. Congress. So, for example, we had the bill that Democrats in Congress are most proud of, the Affordable Care Act, the health care reform law, was nearly defeated because of the intransigence of President Obama and the Democrats on the issue of federal funding of abortion. They did not want to include a Hyde Amendment in this new law, which established new funding streams that were not subject to the Hyde restrictions on the federal funding of abortions. And Planned Parenthood and NARAL, but mostly Planned Parenthood, lobbied furiously and basically made it a deal breaker, and the entire bill almost fell. At the 11th hour, a handful of so-called pro-life Democrats capitulated and gave Planned Parenthood the victory that they wanted. Later this past year, in 2011, in April, there was almost a government shutdown over budgetary disagreements. Mike Pence had introduced a law that would have defunded Planned Parenthood at the federal level, and President Obama told John Boehner, "This is a deal breaker. We will let the government shut down if you keep this provision in the budget." And so, at the last moment, congressional Republicans gave way and allowed the federal money to keep flowing to Planned Parenthood. Here in my own state of Indiana, we have our state legislature, and signed by our Governor Mitch Daniels, enacted a bill that stripped taxpayer funding of any health care entity that provides elective abortions, and that, of course, includes Planned Parenthood. And so what happened is we got a letter from the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services saying, "We will take away all of your Medicaid funds, every billions of dollars withdrawn from your state, money that's necessary to care for poor people in your state who need health care, who can't afford it. You won't get that unless you restore funding to Planned Parenthood." So in that instance, it was the poor of Indiana who needed health care. And Indiana is not alone in this way. Texas is in the same boat. Other states have followed suit. And Planned Parenthood's politicians in Congress and in the White House and the administrative agencies that the White House controls, like Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, decided to exact revenge and hold hostage our Medicaid funds. And then finally, the most high-profile example is this dispute that's continuing over the president's insistence, through executive fiat, not through legislation, but through the decision of Kathleen Sebelius, to mandate that every institution in the country, virtually every Catholic institution, virtually every religious institution in the country, will have to purchase insurance plans that entail the free provision of contraception, sterilization, and certain drugs that have abortifacient properties, according to their FDA labeling. You read the news. Planned Parenthood, Cecile Richards of Planned Parenthood was at the center of lobbying for that bill, lobbying for that administrative action, and they were successful. I mean, the so-called compromise that was announced this past week is nothing of the sort. It's still the case that most religious institutions, most Catholic institutions, will have to provide health insurance policies to their employees that include the free provision, and I say free for the employee, not free for the university, because the university will obviously pay for the contraception and sterilization and abortifacients through their purchase price of the contract. It'll be built into the purchase price of the contract. So Planned Parenthood has run the table. I mean, they are an unbelievably powerful and efficient machine at imposing its will and making sure that none of the money that it wants from tax dollars, from private charities, are cut off.
Talk about their in with the media. I don't want to overgeneralize here, but it has been noted that rarely have we seen the kind of coverage that was given to, I mean, and $650,000 is a lot of money, but in the billion-dollar framework, it is not really
a lot
of money in that framework. And yet, there was more coverage of Komen withdrawing that small, relatively small amount of money than just about any story occurring. And there are some other big stories happening during those few weeks.
No, that's right. It dominated news coverage because many people in the media who work in the media come from the corners of elite culture where Planned Parenthood is regarded as a humanitarian organization. You know, despite the fact that it's the nation's number one abortion provider, despite the fact that it sells over 300,000 abortions per year, which produces hundreds of millions of dollars of revenues for them. They pass over that fact. They regard them as doing really important and helpful work. And so, when you come up from that cultural milieu and you're working at the New York Times or you're working at the Washington Post, and an obvious narrative in your mind is, well, why would Komen, this beloved organization, cut off this very important humanitarian women's health organization? Well, there must be a narrative of conflict involving nefarious right-wing ideology. There must be some right-wing boogeyman hiding in the bushes who has bullied Komen into doing this, and that's going to be the story. The story is not a giant billion-dollar behemoth who bullies charities into giving it money. The story is the unseen power of the right wing conservative movement at work. So the story is the opposite of the narrative in the media, but it's sort of unimaginable this much beloved organization of Planned Parenthood would take on such tactics. But I mean, I think any fair minded observer who looks at the past 2 years, you can't avoid the conclusion that this is a ruthless organization that pursues money and funding at all costs.
We'll take a break. When we come back, some more conversation with Professor Carter Sneed of Notre Dame University Law School about the vast media and political network of Planned Parenthood. Stay tuned. You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.
Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11 inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. issuesetc.org, go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Thanks for supporting the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. through the charitable grant program Thrivent Choice. We received more than $15,000 last year through Thrivent Choice. Our goal this year is to raise more than $20,000 through Thrivent Choice. For more information on how you can designate funds to Lutheran Public Radio, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page at issuesetc.org. Please support Issues Etc. in 2012 with Thrivent Choice. Welcome back to Issues Etc. It's Tuesday afternoon, February the 14th. I'm Todd Wilk, and we're talking with Professor Carter Schneed of Notre Dame University Law School about the vast media and political network of Planned Parenthood. Professor Schneed, some might say that this is what Planned Parenthood can get away with when they have a powerful ally in the White House in President Barack Obama. Is there more to it than that?
I think it goes far deeper than that. I mean, obviously, President Obama is deeply, deeply sympathetic and connected to Planned Parenthood. Cecile Richards, who is one of the heads of their political action committee, regularly meets with President Obama. She frequently talks about how what a close relationship they have. President Obama, obviously, he's hired many members of his staff. The head of his domestic policy council, Melanie Barnes, was on the board of Planned Parenthood. I mean, there's a revolving door between Planned Parenthood and the Obama administration, for sure, in terms of personnel. But even if President Obama were not elected, even if a person who didn't have those ties to Planned Parenthood were in the White House, it still wouldn't change the fact that the Democratic Party, as a national party, relies on Planned Parenthood as one of their core constituencies, relies on their money, believes in their message. I don't mean to make it sound cynical. It is the case that many Barbara Boxer and all these other senators, Richard Blumenthal and others from Connecticut, Claire McCaskill in your state. That they share the ideology of Planned Parenthood. They believe in the abortion rights. They believe in the kinds of the kind of ideology that underlies Planned Parenthood. And that's not going to change. With the change in the White House. Although I would say the White House is an important and necessary step to rolling back Planned Parenthood's hegemony. But it's not sufficient. I will say though. I mean, you know, if you don't have someone in the White House who's going to veto a bill, I could imagine people voting to defund Planned Parenthood on grounds that are not related to the life question, that simply we're in a time of economic crisis and we can't afford to give, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars to Planned Parenthood that the federal government does. And so we should cut that off and put that money to better use. I think there's fiscally conservative reasons to do that, and I think there may be people in Congress who are maybe themselves in favor of abortion rights who could see the wisdom of defunding Planned Parenthood. And in that case, the different occupant of the White House would be decisive.
Now, you just mentioned this in passing a moment ago, but talk about it. The money does flow both ways. Planned Parenthood does give, through its political action committee and through other means, considerable amount of money back into Washington.
That's right. Well, they spend millions of dollars on lobbying, for one thing. They spend millions of dollars on litigation. It's not an accident that the main case name that defines the current abortion jurisprudence is Planned Parenthood versus Casey. They have an impact litigation apparatus that they use. They spend a lot of money trying to influence the political branches and the judiciary. But at the same time, as you say, they receive a great deal of money in federal funding from the government. And I'm not an expert on this, but my understanding is one of the criticisms of Planned Parenthood is they don't do a very good job, or if do any job at all, of segregating their funds, so that if you give $1 to Planned Parenthood for manual breast screening, or you give $1 to Planned Parenthood for some other, you know, to distribute contraception, that's a dollar that they're going to use to fund their abortion practices. So I don't believe that they're very good. And again, I'm not an expert. I'm merely reporting what has been reported in the media. My sense is that they don't even try to segregate those funds. All the money that goes to Planned Parenthood, even though it's by law, by certain laws, there are restrictions on federal funding of abortion. The money that goes to Planned Parenthood is not earmarked for abortion, but there's no reason to believe that it's not being used for that, because money, after all, is fungible, and they don't do, according to reports, a good job of segregating their funds.
Talk about what started all of this, at least from Komen's perspective. They were dealing with kind of internal policies about giving money to organizations that were under criminal investigation. In this case, at least at this point, Planned Parenthood under congressional investigation for criminal activity, which is a fine distinction there.
Yeah, well, I'll say this. There are multiple reasons, as I understand it. I don't have any firsthand knowledge of Komen's deliberations about this, but there are multiple reasons for why they made the decision to separate themselves from from Planned Parenthood. The first reason, of course, was related to this rule about not funding organizations that are under investigation. And they in their revision of their policy, they said, well, you know, politicians frequently investigate political enemies, so we don't want to make that decisive of ineligibility for funding. But Planned Parenthood has been in the past, and as I understand it, according to news reports, is still under investigation for a variety of things, not just in Congress, but also by attorneys general and local prosecutors and various regulatory agencies in Indiana, and I don't know if that's been resolved or not, but certainly in Kansas, there's ongoing lawsuits. Alabama had an investigation. Texas has had investigations. Arizona has had investigations. I'm not sure what the status of those investigations are, but there's an array of investigations, mostly in the wake of the live action expose on a host of agencies of Planned Parenthood operations that were not complying with the law and seemed to be willing to participate in criminal activity, but also with respect to segregation of funds and failure to comply with other state laws restricting, requiring parental involvement and the like, and late-term abortions as well. So Planned Parenthood is not only under investigation by Congress, or has not only been under investigation by Congress, according to news reports. So that's one reason. The other reason that Komen decided to do this was because Planned Parenthood didn't add that much value as a partner in the fight against breast cancer. There were only 19 clinics that were receiving Komen grants. None of them provided mammography. They only provided manual breast exams, usually pursuant to well woman visits. Not it wasn't a targeted program of breast cancer screening. And so the Susan G. Komen said they didn't want to fund so-called pass-through grants. They didn't want to fund grants of people who would middlemen who would refer individuals to these kinds of things, but rather wanted to fund the mammography centers themselves directly. And I think that makes a lot of sense. Why? And they're entitled to make that decision about the best use of their money. And then I think the third reason was because Planned Parenthood is, for better or worse, a controversial organization. I mean, they are the number one provider of abortion in America. There's nothing more controversial than abortion. And it's easy to understand, just as a basic political matter, whether one agrees or disagrees with abortion rights, to say, it's not good business as a charity. We'll have more widespread appeal if we're seen to be neutral on this question. And I think all taken together, every single one of those justifications makes sense. And yet, they were bullied into retracting some of the policy that they had adopted.
With only about a minute and a half before we conclude here, what does all of this tell you, both the past history, the general power that Planned Parenthood seems to have and sway that it has in the culture and our politics, what does it tell you about the place of the abortion issue, the life issue, in the political body of America right now?
Yeah, I'm encouraged to see public opinion polls suggesting that people define themselves as pro-life at a higher percentage than they do pro-choice or pro-abortion rights. I think that demography is going to be our friend. That is, the youth are overwhelmingly more pro-life than their parents and their grandparents are. I think because with the advent of certain kinds of technologies, they see that the unborn child is one of us. They see literally with their eyes the face of the unborn child using these ultrasound technologies, and they understand just by living in the culture when people are pregnant and it's a happy event and they put little ultrasounds up, even the ultrasounds that are unclear that you need some expertise to discern where the baby is in the photo. They put them up on their wall or on their refrigerator, and people are happy and they celebrate. And they're not celebrating a choice. They're not celebrating the autonomy of the woman who is carrying the baby. They're celebrating the new life that's growing inside of her. And I think people understand that, and I think that they're more finely attuned to equality than we have been in the past, and they understand that there's no defensible reason why the child in the womb shouldn't enjoy the protections of the law. And it's a grave form of discrimination to kill that child, and injustice. And I think people understand that. I think that the fact that politicians are squeamish about using the word abortion, except in the most pro-abortion rights jurisdictions. I mean, President Obama tried to pretend that he had something other than an extreme record on abortion when he was running for president, and that fooled some people. He's pursued several policies that are profoundly anti-life, in my opinion, with respect to embryo research and abortion. And I think that And I think that it's going to be harder for them to hide. There's a real record now for these politicians, and I think that in states like Missouri in particular, people don't like the idea of the radical injustice of abortion and embryo destruction. And the more it comes up, the more it harms the politicians that support an unlimited right to abortion.
Professor Carter Schneed is professor of law and director of the Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame. He's author of a recent column for the Wall Street Journal titled Planned Parenthood's Hostages. You can read this column at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Professor Schneed, thank you again for your time.
Thank you so much.
When we come back on this Tuesday afternoon, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is going to join us. We're going to talk about something that happened at Yale University last week. They had a whole week called Sex Week. You got to wonder, how did Western civilization survive without Sex Week at Yale University? Somehow it did. We'll see what she thinks about that, especially as a former economics teacher at Yale University. Then we're going to talk about late 3rd century martyr St. Valentine, the real Valentine. Dr. James Busher of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be our guest. Round off a Valentine's Day program with a little of the real St. Valentine. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is a practical manual for pastors and for church leaders, for pastors and elders. It rightly begins where everything pertaining to the church should begin, with the clear word of God, and it comes back around full circle and ends there, that these are two offices, one divinely instituted, the other found to be helpful in assisting the pastor in proclaiming the gospel and administering the sacraments that are needful in the church. Read more about it in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February. Pastors and elders, or call Concordia Publishing House and order it,
1-800-325-3040. In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.
What are church elders responsible for? How can we build trust between pastors and elders? And how can we hold one another accountable? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is titled Pastors and Elders, Caring for the Church and One Another. You can check it out at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Pastors and Elders by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, Pastors and Elders.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
An aptly named bill.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony list, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Representative Trent Franks of Arizona recently introduced a bill in Congress called the Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass Prenatal Non-Discrimination Act. The bill would make it illegal to knowingly perform or finance sex selection or race-based abortions. Although the bill has little chance of becoming law this term, it is nevertheless causing quite a stir. Pro-abortion advocates call it extreme, and the NAACP opposes it. But supporters of the bill rightly point out that the bill simply targets gender and racial discrimination. Polls also show that most Americans consider such abortions to be immoral.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.